International attention and action was largely due to outbursts of internal tensions in South Africa. The apartheid legislation turned South Africa into a police state, inciting violence from both the government and the anti-apartheid movement. Resistance to oppressive apartheid laws took the form of mass action through boycotts and protests, although all public gatherings had been banned throughout the country. However, unrest among Africans became clear with the Soweto Uprising, where hundreds of high school students boycotted class and marched in the streets in protest, which broke out into violence when police opened fire on students. The image from the Soweto Uprising of a student holding dying 13-year-old Hector Peterson circulated around the world, bringing international condemnation of the apartheid government. The South African government could no longer contain or veil the unrest within the nation, and consequently, the injustices of apartheid became clear to the world. African resistance, as well as domestic organizations, put pressure on the apartheid government to consider negotiations. The Congress of South African Trade Unions was an influential domestic force that represented 30 trade unions and organized strikes to protest economic conditions and to support anti-apartheid activism. In 1985, the African National Congress made a declaration of war on the South African government to push for negotiations. Both the ANC and the PAC trained guerrilla soldiers to carry out sabotage attacks on municipal buildings such as the South African Air Force in Pretoria and the South African Coal, Oil, and Gas Corporation. In an attempt to end unrest, Prime Minister Botha offered to release Nelson Mandela from prison on the terms he would condemn violence as a political instrument. When Mandela refused this offer, it was clear that domestic resistance was not going to end without significant change in South African government. Domestic violence and pressure were pertinent factors that awoke the world to the injustices of apartheid and forced the South African government to negotiations.
In 1946, the Indian government requested that the United Nations add investigation into the treatment of Indians in apartheid South Africa to the agenda for the first meeting of the General Assembly. Throughout the rest of the 1940s, India continued to prompt the UN to investigate, discuss, and act on the issue of South Africa. However, the reluctance of major Western powers, namely Britain and the United States, created a significant gridlock within the UN and stalled decisive action. It was not until April 1960, in the wake of the Sharpeville massacre, that the UN adopted a resolution that formally called on South Africa to abandon apartheid. 2 years later, the UN created the Special Committee Against Apartheid to investigate South Africa's discriminatory policies and look into the potential effectiveness of economic sanctions. Western powers and others with financial interests in South Africa initially boyfocused the committee. In August 1963, the Security Council adopted the committee's resolution, which called for all states to impose an embargo on the shipment of arms and other military equipment. Though the UN had no way of requiring states to impose the sanctions, the adoption of this resolution signified that the international community at large was taking a firmer anti-apartheid stance and advocating for direct action. Later that same year, the Council added petroleum to the embargo. Throughout the following decades, the UN continued to try to impose and encourage states to uphold effective economic and cultural sanctions. Conflicting self-interest among different states has left the effectiveness of the UN's resolutions up for debate. However, the UN's support of sanctions and continuous condemnation of apartheid and its supporters from the 1960s on undoubtedly added to growing international outrage and calls for action.
Many cultural and sporting boycotts took place that hindered South Africans' international relationship during apartheid. The international community became very effective in isolating South African sports and showing the black community that they had international support. For instance, in 1964, there was international effort to expel South Africa from participating in the Tokyo Olympics, and again in 1968, South Africa was excluded from Mexico Games. Passports were taken away to prevent the players from even traveling to the international games. Supporters including Ireland, England, France, and New Zealand helped to protect black South Africans from withdrawing from white South African players from the sports competitions. Shutting South Africa out of international sports was another way of isolating South Africa from international community. Rugby in particular held symbolic importance for the white athletes of South Africa who dominated the society during the development of the sporting structures. During apartheid, rugby became a highly political practice because it promoted the white supremacist ideals. Sports traditionally played a predominant role in reinforcing distinct racial identities, like privileging white players before other races. Therefore, this is why sports were an effective form in cultural sanctions.
In 1986, apartheid entered the American political arena. Before 1986, the American government identified South Africa as a vital bulwark against the communist onslaughts in Angola and Mozambique. This began to change as the brutality of the apartheid regime became more and more difficult to ignore. William Gray, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, introduced the Comprehensive Anti-Apartheid Act of 1986, and thus began a small but controversial political fight between the executive and legislators. American interests are clearly outlined in the working of the law. American politicians clearly did not want to side with a white supremacist state, but were also uncomfortable with championing the ANC for its ties to terrorism and communism. To undermine apartheid, the United States would prohibit loans, South African exports, Kruger Rands, and freeze South African investments and bank accounts. These measures would be enforced until a number of minimal standards, including the release of political prisoners, were met by the Republic's government. Additionally, the United States positioned itself as a peace broker, hence the comprehensive aspect of the legislation. The ANC needed to distance itself from Nkonko Zizwe and the South African Communist Party in order for the United States to aid negotiations. After being introduced and passed through both houses of Congress, President Reagan vetoed the bill due to its potential to undermine his authority in foreign affairs. A political skirmish ensued, with Congress overriding Reagan's veto and passing the bill into law.
Two forms of international economic sanctions that were also implemented in order to bring an end to apartheid were divestment and disinvestment. Divestment refers to the act of an institutional investor selling stock of American corporations doing business in or with South Africa. For instance, in 1987, California approved a plan to remove state pension funds of more than $11 billion of South African-linked investments. Additionally, over $410 million of college and university endowments were reportedly involved with divestment. Disinvestment, on the other hand, refers to American corporations closing down or selling off their operations in South Africa and withdrawing their physical assets. U.S. companies such as Apple Computer, Bell & Howell, General Electric, and GTE sold off or repatriated their assets from South Africa. In October of 1986, IBM and General Motors quickly announced their plans to withdraw from South Africa in the near future. In March 1987, Xerox became the 24th company to announce complete withdrawal in the first 3 months of that year. During that time period, the number of American firms with factories or offices in South Africa also dropped from over 325 to 182 by March of 1987. Direct investment by outside firms in South Africa also dropped from a high of $2.6 billion in 1981 to $1.3 billion by early 1985 and lowered steadily until new long-term capital virtually ceased to flow into South Africa.
Controversy over economic sanctions lasted into the early 1990s. During the presidency of George H.W. Bush, President F.W. de Klerk began to meet the minimal requirements to lift sanctions. In 1991, Congress repealed the Comprehensive Anti-Apartheid Act at Bush's discretion. Some argued that the premature repeal of sanctions rewarded de Klerk's duplicitous government. Despite the release of Mandela and other prominent anti-apartheid leadership, South Africa continued to wage war against activists through state terrorism, martial support for Inkatha, and covert assassinations of political opponents. Observers and frontline activists united in denouncing Bush's decision. Others argued that the continued sanctions were detrimental to the South African economy and weakened the process of reconciliation. Despite the repeal, businesses would not return to the country due to the instability and violence, as well as the unpredictable future resulting from the collapse of white rule. The sanctions' potential to harm South Africa's economy beyond rehabilitation is a relevant concern, considering it contained the potential to stratify South African society after the end of apartheid. Les de Villiers, a South African politician, affirmed the sanctions' effect on forcing the apartheid regime to act. De Klerk's failure to mention the sanctions, despite his private concern with these actions in his landmark 1990 speech, and the speed with which he met the minimal requirements for repeal, indicate just how much of an impact sanctions had. From this evidence, it is safe to say that sanctions did have the effect intended. However, while economic sanctions managed to isolate South Africa from international affairs, it was not the only factor that brought about an end to apartheid. Economic sanctions, in addition to political activism, helped bring an end to apartheid's unjust policies. Amala Zemponto, Zemponto.